You are listening to Anamkara, a podcast about the spiritual journey and what makes us human. Anamkara is a soul friend, a person with whom you can share your deepest thoughts, feelings, and dreams with. In this podcast, I will share my journey as well as occasionally have guests from myriad different religions and walks of life. And for a time, we walk together and learn from each other's journey. So come along with us and be an Anamkara, a soul friend. Hey friends, last month was Gay Pride Month, and I decided to step out of my little introverted space and attend a community pride worship service. I hoped it would have representatives from the major religious traditions present showing their affirmation and support of LGBTQIA community and of our spiritual lives. However, this service was a Christian one and included communion. Nothing wrong with that. But as the service began, for me, my heart began just pounding in my chest, and I felt so uncomfortable there. I wanted to leave, and after the homily, I did leave, so that I wouldn't be expected to participate in communion. Mind you, I like Jesus. Especially these past few months, I've explored Jesus as a spiritual teacher. But Christianity, oh, that's another thing. I didn't realize all the trauma, religious trauma that I still have. And this Protestant type worship service brought this trauma to the surface. And I had to leave so I didn't have a full-blown panic attack. And for any of my listeners who may not know, the story that I've told again and again is that as a teen, I became a hardcore fundamentalist Christian. I wound up working in the church and entering the mission field. And when I confided with my religious community that I was struggling with my sexual orientation, I was brought home from the mission field, and my community kicked me out and shunned me. It brought me to the brink of suicide. So back to the current story. However, when I realized in this Pride service, one of the things I realized is that now, at this stage in my life, I can look at that experience back then differently and rewrite the narrative. Through my struggles with my sexuality, I began to question Christian tenets. And ultimately, so-called Orthodox Christianity and the church. And I've always affirmed that they rejected me, but I've never acknowledged, owned, and affirmed that I also reject that Christianity. Those services are not safe spaces for me. They are not life-giving. Their beliefs are not my beliefs. And then I'm free to choose again, and I have. My spirituality today is largely nature-based, grounded in meditation and acts of kindness. And it's through all three of those that I come to know and see God or spirit, goddess, whatever label you choose to use. And so I am rewriting the narrative. It's not so much about them rejecting me, it's about me moving on, and that my own soul pushed me to move on. Today's episode is about those places on the outside, often those liminal places, outside of any one religion, while maintaining a deep spiritual practice. My guest today is Ellis Anthony Peters. Ellis is a mindfulness meditation and yoga teacher. His specializations in these spaces, they're non-sectarian. They are seated mindfulness meditations, mindfulness in the outdoors. And he hosts a podcast called the Ellis Anthony Podcast and creates mindfulness and spiritual content. He holds an undergraduate degree in psychology and religious studies and is currently completing an MA in yogic studies with a concentration in mindfulness. I hope you enjoy today's episode. All right, Ellis, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So let's jump right in. I am curious, let's start at the beginning. What was your growing up like? Were you raised religious? What kind of kid were you?
Yeah, so I would say I was technically raised religious. Like, I went to Catholic schools my whole life, but I never felt like my family was really dogmatic or religious in like the traditional sense of following specific suggestions in terms of like going to church consistently, reading the Bible, praying. Like, we did a little bit of that, but it was not like, I would say our family and the way I grew up was very secular, but I went to Catholic school, so I always had like a religious aspect to my life. Then I would say around like 13 or so is when I started to kind of like question some of the things that I was learning in that tradition. And that kind of led me to, I would say, I probably considered it atheism at the time. It probably was more agnosticism, but much more of like an interest in science. And I feel like the common questions that would come up for a lot of people who are like turning 13 or 14 is like, well, how could there be this and this and this if God exists? And that kind of led me to just more of like an interest in exploring science. And eventually that led me back to different spiritual traditions, but that was kind of my approach with Catholicism growing up.
So how did you come to be interested in spirituality?
That's a good question. I think a big thing for me when I was 15 or 16 is when I started getting into different types of psychedelics, basically. That was what opened me up to meditation, really. So I think if I didn't have psychedelic experience, I probably still would have gotten interested in meditation. Like, meditation had always been something that intrigued me. But when I had some experiences on psychedelics, it really kind of opened me up to like the direct experience of there being something beyond the human perspective and our ordinary senses. That experiential understanding allowed me to really feel comfortable and interested in exploring that deeper. And so then that, I would say, was probably like my biggest early interest in spirituality, so to speak. And then I kind of realized, okay, like, there seems to be some approaches to tapping into these deeper aspects of reality and ourselves that are existent in these different in different traditions, especially like, in my perspective at the time, it was mainly like Buddhism was what I was interested in. So I'd say that's kind of like how it started.
So I'm curious, did you have a particular experience using psychedelics that kind of said there's something more, something beyond? What was the connection? I'm curious. I just finished Ram Dass's Being Ram Dass, you know, and of course his whole journey, and I'm having never done psychedelics, I'm curious, what is the experience that seems to draw people to go deeper after that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of different ones for people, you know, different types of experiences, but yeah, there definitely seems to be similarities. And there's a book, one of my favorite books is The Perennial Philosophy by Aldous Huxley, and he talks about kind of some of the commonalities in psychedelic experience and non-dual spiritual traditions. And I would say for me, those were some of the like consistent experiences that I would have of like a dissolving of a sense of myself in a very egotistical context or in an egotistical sense, and kind of like experiencing myself to be much more expansive and much freer and loving too. There are definitely moments where when that experience came in, or that like feeling came to be, there was also a sense of love and a sense of like interconnection with everything. And then other things too, like what I also remember is I would just have these like insights come to me in those moments. It was, you know, like the term downloads is really popular now. It felt like I would just have these constant downloads, like these clear understandings and insights that are similar to what sometimes will happen to me in meditation now, where if I'm just like in an open state and there's no thoughts for a while, it seems that there's these kind of like energetic slash intellectual insights that can come in out of nowhere. And I definitely remember having a lot of those during that time period too. They felt true, although what would happen a lot is I would try to explain those insights afterwards and I couldn't.
Right.
Which is like a common occurrence, I think, for a lot of people when they have these feelings on psychedelics of, oh, I understand. And then like, as soon as you try to like explain it, it's gone, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I had a specific moment when I remember I was sitting at my parents' house and I was probably 17, and I probably like ate mushrooms or LSD, one of the two. Those were like what I was mostly interested in. And I remember sitting in my room and I was so fully convinced that all that existed was just what was in my immediate experience right there. And I was totally content with that. I was like, oh, this is all that exists. Just this right here. And it felt freeing too in a way. It was weird. It wasn't like a scary feeling. But yeah, kind of like an experience. That was one moment where it was like an experiential feeling of reality that was totally different than, you know, everyday experience, obviously. There were a few other like specific moments that I remember, but those are like the common occurrences, I would say.
Do you have any spiritual mentors or gurus or people that kind of consider your guides on this path?
Yeah, I've had a lot of different mentors, like both alive and who aren't here in the body. I would say Paramahansa Yogananda was the first teacher that I really started studying when I was like 18. When I got into meditation, I read Autobiography of a Yogi. And yeah, it was just very interesting to me, his whole story. And have you read that book before?
Yeah, okay. I think that's almost like the primer all of us kind of come into. And you're like, I want to experience this, I want to see this.
Yeah, it does a really good job of selling spiritual practice,
right?
Yeah. So I always consider Yogananda like one of my spiritual teachers, just because for I guess almost like over 10 years now, there's always been some aspect of his teachings that like inform my spiritual path. Honestly, Ram Dass, I really consider Ram Dass to be like my most, like I feel most connected to him.
Sure.
Because he always expressed his humanity and kind of like honored his neuroses. And he came from like an intellectual background and then got very into bhakti and kind of like blended these two worlds. And that's always resonated with me. I like the teachers, like the like Ramana Maharshi type figures, or like Ramakrishna, who are very, very classically you know, on that Hindu path and are very much in like the traditional guru mold. But I sometimes feel like I'm not able to really deeply understand some of their perspectives just because our lived experiences are so different.
Right. Yeah. I've experienced the same thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you consider yourself part of a particular tradition?
No. Like I was initiated into Yogananda's Kriya Yoga, but I don't really anymore identify with any specific tradition. I would say my own practices are mostly influenced by Zen and Advaita Vedanta, probably.
So yeah. What do you do when you meditate?
That's a good question. It's funny because like I think about meditation so much that like I never think of whenever the term doing meditation comes up, I'm always like, it's not doing.
It's being. It's
doing, exactly. Yeah. But my practices are usually, we will always start with some sort of like breath awareness, just to like develop focus and concentration. Then I'll usually like lead into some sort of choiceless awareness or like open awareness.
Right.
And then from there, sometimes I'll include some self-inquiry. And then outside of that, I practice like yoga asana a little bit. I'm not like really into the postures. I like them occasionally, but I've never been able to like just,
right,
you know, get super into the postures. And then I spend a lot of time in nature as well. So I practice a lot of mindful walking and mindful hiking, just trying to be present with the moment in nature. And then I just am always studying a lot of different texts. So that's kind of like my spiritual practice.
Sure.
Yeah.
Recently on one of your podcasts, you mentioned that you still use the word God, and you know, in our religious circle, sometimes that is a word that's not used very often. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that. Why do you use the word God, and who or what is God to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I actually, after I uploaded that, it was kind of like stream of consciousness when I uploaded that. And afterwards, I was like, I wish I would have said this also. So I think that for me, I'm gonna try to like explain this well. Basically to me, God can kind of, for me, be almost like a mantra, a word that like opens up like an energetic portal in a way, where if I use the word like source is like such a common term in New Age spirituality, it doesn't create that same energy. And I think for me, using the word God has always opened me up to the energy of love. And I think there is something to be said about whether you're dualistic and you believe in separation of oneself and God, or non-dualistic and you believe that's all God. I think there's something to be said about like in moments viewing yourself to be separate from God. Like I think it actually can bring you closer to the realization of the non-duality of it all, the belief in separation at times. Okay. So I think those are a few reasons. And then I think also, I was mentioning Zen as a big part of my, what's influenced my practice a lot. And in Zen, there's like not really discussion of God. And to me, Zen meditation is really powerful in being just present with what is and not doing. And actually to me, when I have the intention, sometimes before that type of meditation, like a choiceless awareness, if I remind myself of this intention that anything that arises in this moment is God, it allows me to just be in an easier way than if I don't have the intention, or if the intention beforehand is just practice non-judgment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something to that for me. Maybe it's my religious upbringing that influences it, but I think the word God to me can deepen understanding and insight for me at times.
Yeah, yeah. So switching gears a little bit, what is the role of, say, ethics or social justice for good causes in spirituality?
What role?
Yeah, so, you know, in this type of spirituality, where does, say, social justice or kindness, acts of kindness, where do they fit in?
So are you saying, like, in the space of not being following one specific tradition, like, where does that fit in that way?
Yes, yeah. And I think, and you can answer however you choose, you know, I'm kind of thinking, say within Judaism, there's a clear, you know, very clear role of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Even in Hinduism, some of the Hindu scriptures talk about the Dharma and how you live it out in kindness and compassion. Mm-hmm. What do you see, let's say, so as a gay person, gay rights and all the stuff going on right now with trans and drag and things like that. How does one bring spirit into that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a really complex topic. I think that ultimately my personal approach to it is that I use my spiritual practice to, I understand specific understandings and insights about myself and life from those practices. And those insights and those perspectives that are informed by those practices then kind of guide my life. So for me, some of those main insights are usually in the space of like interdependence, non-duality, acceptance and compassion, not only for others, but for ourselves. And so for me, that's kind of what informs it for me. And I think when we get into the conversation of like ethics outside of religion, but for people who are interested in spirituality, it's complex because I think there is no dogma, you know, there is no, like you said, there's no specific instruction. So ultimately we are kind of relying on ourselves to make those decisions. And I think to me, ultimately, like for someone to have an informed approach to those questions, who's not religious, it ultimately is the onus is on the person to like educate themselves in multiple areas. You know, if you're not religious, to me, like you should still be educating yourself on like psychology, religion, politics. If you're educating yourself and you're also including these practices in your life, like I really do believe that most people will have compassion for others. They'll have compassion for themselves. They'll not live an incredibly selfish life. I don't know if that's naive, but I think that most people, if they're doing those things, will naturally come to those approaches.
It's kind of like, almost like Jesus said, what was it? Like, by their fruit, you'll know them. And so if you're that practice creates kind of that wellspring of compassion, recognizing interdependence. I think that's kind of what I got from what you were saying. I know I put you on the spot with that one. Sorry.
Good. I like questions like that.
It makes me think of the story, you know, and I'm going to totally botch this story, but Ram Dass tells about his guru. And I don't know if it was after his guru had left his body, but actually it had to have been. But basically said, you don't know how to love until you love your worst enemy as much as you love, say you love God, or as much as you love me. And he was challenged to put a picture of George Bush on his altar and worship it as God. And so for us, that would be, well, sorry, I don't know your politics, but Donald Trump.
That would be the equivalent.
And to see Donald Trump utterly as God and to worship, it is like, holy, that would be a hard practice to get to that point where I can still see compassion even towards him.
Yeah.
And also the side effects. Yeah, it's like, oh gosh, my mind can't even, I'm not there yet, I'll just say.
Well, I think that, like, I don't know if I posted this recently on Instagram, but something that I've been exploring recently is how to have boundaries, but still have love and compassion towards others. And I think sometimes, like in our society today, we think that having compassion and love towards someone means that we don't have boundaries with them.
Right. Like,
yeah, and that's not accurate. Like, we can have compassion for someone like Donald Trump, recognizing if we were in his shoes, the chances of us ending up in a situation like himself would be high.
Yeah.
Maybe it wouldn't be the same. Like, we like to think that, like, if we were him, we would do things totally different. But I think that's where the compassion piece comes in, is like understanding that a lot of times people are doing the best they can. And that doesn't mean that we have to, like, be friends with them or agree with them, but we can have compassion for them because we're able to see, yeah, like the Ram Dass story, see God in them, you know?
Yeah. So what were some books that have been influential on your journey? You talked about one. Are there others that you're kind of your go-to books?
Yeah.
I know you talked recently on Instagram a little bit about that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would say, like, off the top of my head, Autobiography of a Yogi was like one of the first ones. I like a lot of Thich Nhat Hanh stuff. It's very simple, straightforward.
Very practical, yeah. Just, yeah.
Yeah. So there's not any of his books that are like mind-blowing to me where I'm like, oh, this is like the best book ever. But all of them are really good. I like all of his stuff. Alan Watts, The Way of Zen. I think the other one's called The Taboo of Knowing Yourself or something like that. Wisdom of Insecurity is another one that's good. I'm a really big fan in like the interspiritual space of like Mirabai Starr. She's,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love her writings on the mystics. Yeah, I mean, I would say, let me look at my shelf here. I think in terms of the classics, like the Bhagavad Gita, obviously, yeah. the Upanishads, yeah. And then in terms of Zen, I've been reading a lot of like commentaries on Dogen Zenji's work. So his text on meditation is called the Fuken Zazenji. And then he has another text called the Genjo Koan. And to me, they're like so helpful for meditation practice, because so much of what Zen to me is learning to be and rest in that beingness. And some of those teachings from him are amazing. The Gospel of Ramakrishna, that one's really, really deep. Just his life is just so, so amazing. I think that I have another, like in the inner spiritual space, what's it called? It's like Wayne Teasdale and...
The Mystic Heart.
The Mystic Heart, yeah.
Yeah.
I like that one, in a similar vein to like the Perennial Philosophy, although they're like definitely have differences. That's a good one. I just shared on my story yesterday, Gary Snyder's book, The Practice of the Wild, I think it's called. And it's a cool book, kind of like this intersection of what the wilderness is, and he kind of ties in stories about Zen, because he was, I'm pretty sure he was and is a Zen Buddhist. So it's a cool book on like the intersection of nature and wilderness and Buddhist principles in a way. So yeah, I love spiritual books. So.
Yeah, same. It's always love to know what people are reading, what ones stood out. So many of the listeners on here are in the process of deconstructing, say, from fundamentalism. What insights might you give them or offer them on that journey?
So maybe it could be helpful for me if you like elaborate on what the usual process of that looks like.
Sure. And I think it's people who, especially nowadays, it often starts with maybe starting to question. It could be they see in politics some of the stuff going on in the name of Christianity, and so they start questioning, and sometimes it leads them to atheism, sometimes it leads them to a very different type of Christianity, maybe more mystical, non-dual. Different people deconstruct, taking apart their beliefs and seeing what's left when it's done, kind of in it, and how it might have changed. So you know, and knowing what you know, say, about Zen and Vedanta, what does it have any words of wisdom for someone doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that I noticed on my journey after studying Buddhism and yoga and Hinduism more is that, like, in the Christian tradition, all the same stuff exists there. I think it could be a little more challenging to see the mysticism in the tradition than like Vedanta or Zen, but it's still there. And so I think, I'm sure if people are listening, they're probably already open to this idea, but like, you can still be Christian and practice it in a way that is in alignment with mysticism and, you know, your heart, I think. And I think those are like more of what Jesus would probably recognize as true Christians. Right. And I think the world needs those people if Christianity wants to exist in a certain way. But I would say like The Mystic Heart's a good book that talks about mysticism being the root of the of all traditions, of all religious traditions. It starts with some like mystical experience that leads eventually to these dogmatic structures. So like, search for what that mystical experience is, and then allow that to inform your perspective on dogma. Because to me, it's just, it's not wise to just make decisions on dogma without any mystical influence, because to me, like, that mystical aspect is what is the root of dogmatic parts of a tradition. Like, the dogma should support a way of life that is naturally more in alignment with God, or the ability to connect with God. So I would say, from my perspective, like, have practices that can allow you to connect to that mystical experience. And then, yeah, in terms of like Vedanta and Zen, they're both, they're, well, Advaita Vedanta and Zen, they're both non-dual traditions. So they both, in different ways, talk about this idea of the ego being basically an illusion, this idea that we're all separate beings is basically an illusion, and our suffering is because of that attachment that comes from that belief and that ignorance. So I think that concept and that philosophy can be helpful to explore maybe in a deconstruction process.
Makes me think of that prayer in the Upanishads, you know, lead me from the unreal to the real. And sometimes those doctrines are the unreal to the reality of God or truth or life.
Exactly.
Or,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think also I did a presentation recently on Mahamudra of like Tibetan Buddhism, this form of meditation and really like philosophy on who we are. And so much of this one text is just talking about this concepts. You need to transcend concepts. And it's not that having a tradition is bad. It's not that having dogma is bad. But if you actually want to realize Mahamudra or like God or whatever word Zen, you have to go beyond concepts, because ultimately concepts are, it's not real. It's just, it's a made up thing.
Right.
And we have to go beyond that to actually experience like that deeper essence.
Yeah. Well, Ellis, if someone wanted to learn more about you, how could they find you?
I would say my site is ellisanthonypeters.com. Then my Instagram is Spirit of Ellis. My podcast is Ellis Anthony Podcast. And that one, I talk about mindfulness, spirituality, psychology a little bit. Yeah, those are three places.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me here and letting me grill you with all kinds of questions and throw a few loops in there. And
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
This has been another episode of Anamkara, A Friend on the Journey. Thank you for walking with me as we spent time exploring the varieties of religious and spiritual expressions out there. Won't you consider joining our Patreon? Get sneak peeks of what is to come, early previews, and soon to have some video footage from the interviews, as well as polls on what you would like to see covered in future episodes. Join our Patreon today. The link is in the show notes. Thank you.